Welcome to the Global Discussion, discussions with creatives, leaders, and thinkers. My name is Simon Hodgkins, and today I'm joined by Tiffany Xingyu Wang. Tiffany, you're very welcome to the show. Let's begin by asking you to introduce yourself to our worldwide audience. Over to you, Tiffany.
I'm Tiffany. I am currently Chief Marketing and Trust Officer of OpenWeb. OpenWeb is a community engagement platform that powers over 5,000 publishers and brands for content moderation, data management, and monetization. I'm also the president and co-founder of Oasis Consortium, which is a nonprofit that launched the first ever user safety standards for Web3.
Well, that sounds like an awful lot going on, but let's jump straight into it, because you've mentioned trust and safety, and this is a huge topic at the moment because the content is exploding. People are writing more content, publishing more content. There's more user-generated content, and now the machines are playing along too. So artificial intelligence is here, and that's producing content like we've never seen before. So how does the trust and safety and content moderation world work today for a busy, active CMO? Because it's changing, isn't it?
Absolutely. First of all, you're absolutely right. Today, over 80% of the content online is user-generated content. And this situation of the lack of trust and safety will only be worsened with the watershed moment of generative AI, because now machines are part of creation and machines are participating in the content generation. So if you ask me about landscape right before generative AI was widely adopted in the past 12 to 18 months, I can give you a very quick summary of the evolution. So historically, we have the online toxicity issues. That means hate speech, harassment, self-harm, human trafficking, CSAM, the child sexual abuse materials. And historically, we first use humans to manage that issue, right? And then we add some automation technologies we call keywords-based technologies. That means if you look at a profanity word, and then the machine will take that out and saying this is a profane word, and we take action upon it. That can be warn a user, ban a user, or delete content, etc. Now, this, if you think about it, is not that accurate. If you say the F word, it is marked as profane word, but if you say this is F awesome, this is very positive sentiment. So it's not very accurate. So since the past 5 to 7 years, there was a lot of artificial intelligence that was adopted. And right before generative AI, the content moderation and trust and safety world has the best practice of using artificial intelligence to really increase the accuracy of content moderation and with humans in the loop, because there are so many gray areas in the space where you want humans to make sure the machine made the right decision. But you also want to make sure that humans can look at the training data of the models to make sure the models are as unbiased as possible, as culturally aligned as possible, and by giving feedback to the machines and to get better. Now, in the past 12 to 18 months, things are getting more complicated because generative AI is coming into the picture. So right now, there is a lot of effort and a discussion about how we can make sure that generative AI can have guardrails of trust and safety. And we can dive deeper into it. But overall, the idea is generative AI is a piece of machinery. So overall, you can think of garbage in, garbage out. So to make that more trustworthy, then you need to put gatekeeper along that funnel. So that means what data you're using to train the model, right? Are they unbiased or are they very biased? And how can you unbias it? And then how the machinery is working, who are working behind that machinery? Can that be more the most inclusive possible? Then you need to look at the prompt moderation, right? You know, what question you're asking, is that going to be the issue to guide the machine to be racist, right? And then how do you give the feedback to the machine so that the machine understands what good looks like? And then there's a lot of value alignment and value setting work in that humans in the loop reinforcement learning stage. So overall, there is a lot of work to really, really understand how we can make generative AI a civil and responsible player in the coming generation of the internet.
Yeah, and it's moving pretty quickly, isn't it? We're seeing AI develop and transform. The computing power continues to increase. We're tiptoeing towards maybe one day generative intelligence becomes general intelligence, and maybe we end up with quantum computing. I mean, that may be some time off, but it is certainly moving very, very rapidly. And you, as you're speaking there, I'm thinking it's as though we need to really make sure that this trust and safety, this sort of critical access, maybe if I can use that term, is available, and that we're actually setting it up the right way. You mentioned data bias, and it reminds me of, I mean, you're a chief marketing officer. You're hugely experienced in this field when it comes to digital trust and safety. But you also mentioned that you're, you know, the nonprofit work that you're involved in too, as a president and a co-founder, because you got a lot of attention at that time from MIT Review, Harvard Business Review, Time, and other people. And then some of the platforms which our users and people watching and listening to us today will know, whether it was Pandora or Roblox or some of these larger platforms. Could you maybe expand on that a little bit more?
Yes, I remember that when I first tried to launch the user safety standards for Web3 with the think tank of OSS Consortium, and when I went out to the media and talked with reporters, I had to do a whole 5 to 10 minutes explanation of what trust safety meant and what content moderation was. And that was only 3-4 years ago. And fast forward today, it is just a concept that most of the business leaders and operators know what it is. So I'm really glad that we have seen the growth of awareness and implementation in the past few years. But coming back to really the question you ask about, you know, why I did that, why it was important. Well, before Open Web, I was the chief strategy and marketing officer of a leading content moderation company called Spectrum Labs, and which was recently acquired by ActiveFans, which is a leading content moderation service and a technology company. And when I was trying to deliver the products and the services to companies about content moderation to keep their platform safe, and I realized that, oh boy, there wasn't any standard. There wasn't any consensus of what good looks like. People know what bad looks like. People know what hate speech looks like. They know what racism looks like. They don't know what good look like. What actually trust means, what actually safety means. And without that benchmark and consensus, it makes very, very difficult for operators of trust and safety in those platforms and brands and companies to be able to tell their internal stakeholders what they need to do, what budget they should have, and what people they need to hire to be successful. That's one. Also, I realized that it was not a discipline which was taught in the college, because overnight user-generated content became a thing because the speed and velocity it had, and nobody really foreseed that was coming from the college perspective. And I was like, God, maybe I could do something with my team back then at Spectrum Labs and with my allies across Pandora, Roblox, Riot Games, the Me Group, Salesforce, BBC, and because all of those operators care so much about the trust and the safety and the privacy. And we said, well, let's come together. Representative of different industries, different roles, and different challenges that we had, and came together to create a baseline guidepost that anyone can use to adopt for their own company as a start point. And then that's why we came together, we launched the first user safety standards, and we picked the date of the 1 year anniversary of the Capitol insurrection. Because the belief is that if The reason why it happened, it was because 15 years ago, when we built the social web, it was an afterthought for safety and privacy and inclusion. So, and that was the moment we were building out a Web3 infrastructure, and AI was a part of it. And I was saying, let us make sure that this time we get it right, so that not in 5 years or 7 years or 15 years that we had another capital insurrection, but this time will be in the digital world, and impact and the scale will be only much bigger. So that was the reason we did it. And since then, we really have seen that set of standards really cascaded more people to look at this problem and more associations to create policies and implementation of this discipline. So we're really proud and glad about that work.
Oh, and thank you for taking us through that, because there's an awful lot in that, and there's an awful lot of work that's gone into that. And just for people who are watching or listening to this episode today, you've done an awful lot. I mean, you're also a Young Global Leader program for the World Economic Forum, right? There's the Atlantic Council Trust and Safety Task Force. You're a board member over at the Ad Council. I know you're on the cover of the Tenacious CMO Adweek edition. And you've also, you mentioned earlier, like Harvard Business Review, Forbes, DigiDay, VentureBeat. There's lots of these companies and publications that are seeking out you in particular because of this knowledge, because of the importance of this. And as you were talking there, you were talking about what we used to refer to as the Web 2.0 world, moving into the Web 3.0 world. And now we're kind of almost somewhere else now. And I love to ask people, because I know you have an interest in quantum computing too, and you're also an investor. How you get the time, I don't know, but you're also a venture partner. Where do you think the technology is going to? I know it's a crystal ball question. I know it's a hard one to answer. But when we talk about, you know, hoarding qubits together and the reality of either general intelligence and quantum computing, or one or the other, what's your view as a technologist that's living and breathing this type of work?
Yes. So first of all, I would say all these streams of work that come across in your words a lot, they are all symbiotic parts of pursuing building a trustworthy internet that I hope to build with the rest of the world, with the allies in the industry that I have. So I think I will start answering this question by defining Web3 for me, because there are many different versions of definitions, and there's really no right or wrong. I think the key is, once you have the definition for yourself as an operator, as a leader, then you need to take a first principle approach to contribute to it. And then the way I define it as a semantic web, because in the last iteration of the web, we ended where we had over 80% of the content was user generated content. So that iteration landed us on this semantic web, where content is the king. And of course, you can add a little bit awareness of how generative AI gonna even evolve and change that. So it's a semantic web where you have a few underlying technology movements. One is the Internet of Things. I think the estimation that I've read is by 2025, we will have over 7.5 billion devices online. That means your smartphones, that means my friend, I'm not going to call her name because she's gonna reply to me, the Alexa. And that means your smart fridge, right? They're all interconnected. And I'll come back to the implication of how we make decisions on technologies, adoptions, and ethics about that later. But that's one trend, the Internet of Things. And then you have the metaverse, right? And it was really, really hot before generative AI hit all of us. But I think it's specifically hit us in the West Hemisphere, right? If you look at in Hong Kong, in Southeast Asia, the wave is still, it's keep going. It wasn't this like a fading out and phasing out yet. It's continued. The metaverse, the immersive world that people are connected with each other. And I think the third pillar is really the artificial intelligence, where we're, for the longest time before generative AI, AI was an assistant for us to drive productivity, whatever AI it was, right? Now, AI for the first time became a co-creator and increase the speed and the volume of content creation for the internet. And it's very important to be aware of that. Now, if you take those three underlying paradigms of the technology implications, you have to think about the ethical aspects or the sustainable aspects for those technologies. So when you have Internet of Things, what it really means is the data is no longer somewhere centralized in the data center. The extension of data is everywhere in the world, and the perimeters of the data are no longer in one data center. A few data centers are not centralized, and they are on the edge, right? So how you think about a privacy and the security becomes so much important. So privacy is no longer, for me, a nice to have, it is a must to have when you have the technology movement like IoT. And the second is about a metaverse. And I think for metaverse, you have to think about the safety. All the issues we're talking about in the world without metaverse, about hate speech, harassment, attacks, and the CSEM, the child sexual abuse materials, you know, all those toxic issues, the impact will be only bigger, the velocity will be only higher because of the nature of being immersive. So you have to think about safety. And again, it's not a nice to have, it is must have, because people will not stay if they're attacked in the metaverse. And I think the last is artificial intelligence, is where you need to think about inclusion, because humans are biased. We as humans already have a lot of biases, and the machines are only a reflection of it, and worse. So how you actually take AI as an example to actually rectify as much as possible, not to overfit, but actually to value set your AI, to personalize the AI in alignment with your own values is very important to make sure AI can really help civilizations. So I think those are technology movements, and therefore those ethical parameters of privacy, safety, and inclusion are extremely important for business leaders and operators to adopt when they build or implement technologies as they move forward. And as to quantum computing, is adding the complexity to all of these, because then you need to build quantum proof security when you think about the data. And when you think about AI, and you actually need that potential power and energy and efficiency to drive the AI development. So it is a necessity potentially to drive AI to the next stage, to use new materials and use new functioning and use new machinery to drive the AI. But when that exists, it unlocks the potential across all industries. And you can imagine healthcare, banking, anything. But the flip side is how you create a security today to make sure that when that happens, your system is quantum proof. So that quantum computing adds a new layer of complexity that I think specialized people are thinking of. I just think that as the quantum computing being built out, we need to potentially encourage more conversation, more interdisciplinary conversations now, because that's going to add complexity. So to avoid issues, that conversation across different disciplines have to happen now.
Yeah, that's a lot to think about. I think the compute power, the energy consumption, the rapid speed at which we are trying to build GPUs just to roll out the stuff that we have today is incredible to see. You roll in on top of that some of the companies that are playing with quantum computing in a very serious way at the moment, and trying to build, you know, usable quantum computers that can actually really change the game completely. Where we're going to end up in, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, it's going to be a very interesting space. But as you say, just to bring it back to our conversation, ultimately you end up at something called AI trust, don't you? You end up back at this, you said garbage in, garbage out, which is, you know, a computing term that's been around for a long time. And ultimately the data sets that you train it on, and then how it trains itself, whether it's in the field of robotics or whether it's in the field of content creation. And the question I'm coming to, Tiffany, as a chief marketing officer and as somebody who works with thousands and thousands of publishers and brands, you've worked with governments, you've worked with, you know, leading technology areas too, and leading publications. When it comes to a chief marketing officer in today's world, have you got any advice for people in this space? Because it seems as though the job description has expanded significantly. There are so many different tools in the tech stack today. And then we've got all this data, the security, the privacy. We've got different regulations for different countries around the world. Have you got any advice for a chief marketing officer today who's staring at all this?
Yes. First of all, I'm very humbled by this question. There are so many wonderful CMOs there having their own playbooks to succeed for their own enterprises. And from my vantage point, very specialized in how to build trust through branding, how to build trust through emerging technologies. So I will focus on what I know and to share from my vantage point. So my current role is Chief Marketing and Trust Officer. And of course, I have the conventional marketing purview. That means how to drive the demand, how to build a brand, how to create the communications, public relations, and all of those, I would say, conventional scopes for a CMO. And I also oversee the trust and safety department, the P&L for our content moderation businesses. And I have a wonderful team running the business every day of operations and in collaboration with product team to drive the trust and safety innovation. And the way I look at what CMOs have to understand is that in the past 15 years, there was a pendulum swing toward centralization. So 20 years ago, we asked people to put data in the cloud. So, and fast forward, everything is centralized in the data center. And that actually drove a whole fantastic 20 years of economy. And you have brilliant conglomerates coming out of it, like Salesforce, SAP, Oracle, you name it. And today we see a pendulum swing back to creator and a community empowerment because of the externalities that I mentioned, that it was no one's fault to not think about it. It's very hard to not to think about something that you didn't think about, right? The unknown unknowns. So safety, privacy, and inclusion were becoming the issues that this new generation is inheriting from, and they're demanding to do the businesses differently. They demand businesses to put trust back in the operations so that they actually can be respected, included in the way that they deserve. So because of that, the CMOs have to think about those new dimensions of trust. So the trust from a customer or from a user is no longer just security, performance, reliability. It is safety, privacy, inclusion, and much and many more. And so I've evangelized for creating a chief trust officer role in the C-suite. Because if you look at that, trust is a concept, is evolving every single year, every single decade. It was security, was performance, was reliability, and recently, in the past decade, it became sustainability because of climate change commitment and diversity because all the cultural movements of the issues that we're dealing with inclusion, and now it becomes safety, privacy, and inclusion. So it's never enough. So you need somebody whose job is constantly recognize the topics du jour. It can be diversity, it can be sustainability, but also to foresee what behaviors change that the consumers are going through and what technologies are coming along and what implications of potential distrust it will bring onto your company, and being a single owner of all of that. And that might solve issues we see today that chief sustainability officer and chief diversity officers as roles are facing out. And it's not a bad thing if it's not because of economic recession, is because that they finished their job. Now it is part of the default operations and then they're facing out. That's fine. Just by the way, it's not the case. I think a lot of C-suites in those roles are facing out because of economic recession, and that's not the right reason. But those roles will phase out because they get a job down. But why not have chief trust officer? And the job is to oversee diversity, sustainability, privacy, safety, and many more dimensions to come. So I think as a CMO, we have to understand that trust is such a big part of our job right now. If we do not have a chief trust officer yet in your company who is single owner, it will bite you as a CMO, because if any part of your operations falls apart because trust, guess who is going to be responsible? It's CMO, because you're dealing with your consumers and you're dealing with your brand. And another piece I think CMO needs to think about is the difference between customer and the community. And I think people start to confuse these two concepts a lot, and to overlap the usage of these concepts a lot. And I often explain to people that a community is a way to increase the key metric of any company building, especially if you're venture-backed startup and a scale up. It is the LTV over CAC, the lifetime value over the customer acquisition cost. So all the CMOs know how to drive a funnel and run channels, right? You create awareness, you activate, you retain, and you refer, and then that's the whole funnel. And you do everything you could innovatively to make that funnel as smooth as analyzed and make the capital as efficient as possible. That's our job. We know that. If you're a good CMO, you know that. Now, think about community economy, or the community is a tactic for you to drive the inbound. You create a sphere, you create a square with a certain set of experiences, engagement with a very clear set of policies and values that people can identify themselves with, and they will come to you. And it is the best way for you to drive the lifetime value, because people come back, and also the best way to reduce your acquisition costs, because people come back to you. And I think it's very important to spend time to think what the playbook looks like to drive your own community. And we see some good case studies already in the market. A lot of brands try to build their own community on Roblox, and Roblox is a company on its own, does very well on community economy. TikTok, for example. I think really the chief marketing officer should be the chief community officer, because every single creator is a mini CMO of TikTok. They create content, they go to market, they monetize. So what leaves CMO to do? To make sure the community economy keep going, right? So think about how to create a community, how to drive the community, create a playbook that is tailored to your brand and platform is another thing I think CMO has to think about in this new era.
I really like that, Tiffany. That's really, really good. And you really made me think there about just mentioning TikTok, for example, and a chief community officer, because you've actually got everybody is a mini CMO.
Oh, yeah.
It just completely changes the mindset. I love that. I love what you've been saying there. And also that community building and how that impacts significantly the lifetime value. And the relationship and that healthy environment that people want to be around, right? That yes. Square, that sort of place that people want to revisit. I think it's so important. So thank you so much indeed for taking us through that. That was a great answer to the question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Look, before we run out of time, I want to ask you if there's anything else that maybe we have touched on that you want to maybe expand on. Or is there anything else that you want to share with our worldwide audience today? And secondly, and importantly, If people want to connect and reach out and find out more about all the great things you're doing, where's the best place to point people to?
Yes, I can start with the easier part. You can connect with me through LinkedIn. I use that platform more often than the rest. And you can simply find me by typing my full name. So Tiffany Xingyu, Xingyu, Wang, Wang. So you can connect with me there. And then I also publish the latest thought leadership through that platform. And as to anything I would like to add, I think I want to double click on AI trust. I think it is a very sensitive topic du jour, and we all recently heard about the so-called scandal of Gemini, formerly known as Bard by Google, because of the issues of prompt transformation. In other words, the incident was when someone asks Gemini to generate an image of American founding father, and the picture came out as racially diverse image, which is not historically representative, but actually it is fine if you want to be a creative. But the issue is the reason why that happened was when you prompt a question for the machine, they automatically transform that to something different. It asks that, you know, who are the founding fathers of America? That's what you type, and then it's transformed to be, what are the founding fathers of America? Make sure it is racially diverse. And that prompt transformation was rooted to, I think, the approach we have been taking for AI trust. Something I alluded to, we know what bad looks like, we do not know what good looks like. I think we have focused way too much energy on solving what bad looks like. We categorized issues and use cases and we attack them one by one without systematically thinking what good looks like, what the values that you want to infuse and embed in the machinery. It should not be one size that fits all. It should be personalized with the user who's going to adopt that technology, because of the simple truth that is, one's truth is the other's disinformation, one's hate is the other's passion. So if you have one size and one method to approach AI, you will always end in this loop of no one, not that, that someone is not happy, and scandals will keep popping up. So to address the problem of AI trust, I think is to really tackle the absence or the void of AI value setting. And I think that's a space, that's the area that I want to spend more time on to think and to solve with the industry allies that I have. And I think that's an impactful and meaningful cause to pursue.
That's extremely insightful view to leave us with there. I really like that.
Thank you.
And look, it sounds like we're in safe hands, Tiffany. It's great to have Tiffany with us today. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. You know, we've got not just a creative and a leader, but also a thinker who's really at this cutting edge of where we're going and what the future looks like, and trying to make a better future for everybody. So as a CMO, as a board director, as an investor, I know, you know, Forbes Most Entrepreneurial CMO, I mentioned earlier, the World Economic Forum Young Global Leader, and many other attributes, and, you know, sought by whether it's Harvard Business Review or the MIT Tech Review, for your views and the work that you're doing. So continued success. I want to thank everybody who's been watching or listening to us today around the world. And I'm going to ask you to make sure that you follow, like, subscribe, do everything I'm trying to do here with the podcast. And hopefully you'll join me back here for more discussions with creatives and leaders and thinkers, just like Tiffany. But thank you, Tiffany. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you so much, Simon, and thank you for everyone who is tuning in.